Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Abe Hamilton, AFA Public Policy Analyst. We have a great show for you. In just a few minutes, we're going to have, my favorite Jasper, Melanie Jasper, the wife of J.J. Jasper. She's going to be in talking about an article she wrote, a blog she wrote for The Stand, about being grateful for those who protect and serve. So we'll talk about, she's got a personal connection to the police. And then bottom of the hour, we'll be talking to Bishop E.W. Jackson, who's at the Republican Convention. We'll be kind of picking his brain as to what he sees happening there in Cleveland this week. In the next hour, Alex McFarland will be back talking about whatever issues we can drag out of him. He's so reticent to talk. But we will be discussing with him the 21 toughest questions your kids will ask about Christianity. But first, in studio, we have Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you guys again.
So let's talk a little bit about the GOP convention. That's big news this week. Next week, the Democrats take front and center with their convention in Philadelphia. But this week, it's Cleveland in the news.
It sure is. And I think the Republican convention, at least what we're seeing now, has a lot of energy.
Yeah,
there's a lot of energy there. It's kind of a two-themed convention. It is the issue, and they kind of got most of this out of the way yesterday, the division within the Republican camp. Some people still believing that, in particular, Ted Cruz should have been the nominee. And so that camp was there, and they've been dealing with that over the last couple of days. But the other agenda that's apparent is that Donald Trump has a reputation. Some people would say well-earned reputation. Street fighter, a guy who has said some pretty insulting things about the other Republican candidates, some pretty insulting things about Hillary Clinton, too. And so I think very deliberately, the plan has been over the last 48 hours, the first 2 days of the convention, to bring on Donald Trump's children and family members. Of course, Monday night, it was Mrs. Trump.
Right.
Gave a very good speech, even though there's some controversy over a few lines in her speech. But it's been very deliberate to bring his kids out to paint and really educate the American public about the Donald Trump they don't know.
Right.
Because the Donald Trump they do know is the guy who hosted the show,
Celebrity Apprentice.
Celebrity, you're fired, rough, tough, street fighter type guy. But last night, I think one of the key speeches came from Donald Trump Jr., his oldest son. And the speech was actually quite incredible. It really was, because it did give us a whole different side of Donald. He was talking about his dad and how his dad, grew up in Queens. And, the big developers, the business developers in Manhattan said, Donald Trump from Queens, he's never going to make it.
Right.
And then, of course, as Donald Trump Jr. said last night, my dad changed the skyline.
Yeah.
In Manhattan, referring to all the buildings he's built, et cetera, et cetera. But on a more personal note, he got down to describing how Donald Trump has raised his children. Mm. And Donald Trump Jr. got very personal about how his dad would take him to construction sites. And basically, he would turn over his son to the foreman of the construction site and say, okay, foreman, you're in charge of Donald Trump Jr. You're going to teach him the business. And so Donald Trump Jr. was saying last night he learned how to drive a Caterpillar tractor. Mm-hmm. Just as well, he said, I'm just as familiar with a Caterpillar tractor as I am with my car. Mm-hmm. He learned how to put up sheetrock, all of those sorts of things. So his dad saw the benefit in not just promoting his son to the billionaire corner office, being an advisor, but no, you're going to come up through the ranks. You're going to find out what the blue-collar workers who work for me, how they work. You're going to know their work because you'll become appreciative of the kind of work that they do.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, in Donald Trump's junior speech last night, he talked about how his dad saw value in those blue-collar workers and very often would promote them to the tower offices because he saw the wisdom that they have. They might not have a university degree, but the wisdom that they had picked up through their work at the work site, the construction work site. And he even named a particular individual that advanced up through the ranks because his dad saw great value. And the other speech last night that was interesting from the Trump family was Tiffany Trump, who just graduated a couple of months ago with a double major in sociology and urban studies. But, you know, a young lady, but she also stressed how their dad educated them on the proper work ethic. And you've kind of seen this over the last several months, you know, during the primary campaign, how these kids would show up in interviews, handled themselves very, very well. And what we're learning is that Donald Trump is depending on his family as his closest advisors.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump Jr. last night, it was interesting. You know, a lot of people, he said 11, 12 months ago, told Donald Trump, you'll never be successful running for president.
Right.
You're not a politician. You're just not going to do it. And as he kept saying, the first word that my dad needs to get something done is for somebody to tell him it's impossible.
Right.
Because that's what he's going to do. So it's very interesting. Now, tonight we'll hear from Eric Trump, the other son that you often see interviewed. And they all work for the company now, but they've earned their stripes.
Mm. I was interested to see what you think about this, Fred. I saw a couple of focus groups after the speeches were made, and I was interestingly, many of the people who appeared somewhat hostile to Donald Trump Sr., the Republican candidate for president, after hearing Donald Jr.'s speech, came away with a different perspective.
Very much so. And the Fox News has someone who is doing what they call the dials,
mm-hmm.
Who's monitoring three different groups.
Is that Luntz?
Yeah, Republicans. Yeah. Well, no, it's not Luntz. It's somebody else.
Okay.
At least on the morning shows. They're monitoring Republicans, people who self-identify as Republicans. They're monitoring independents, people who identify as independents, and then Democrats. What's really interesting in monitoring how they were reacting to these speeches last night are the independents.
Hmm.
Now, that's that other 30-35%
right.
that both parties know that they need.
Right.
And the independents, it was amazing the grading, the positive grading they were giving these speeches last night. Another one of the speeches the independents really gave high marks to was Governor Christie, who some people thought that Donald Trump might pick as his running mate. But he gave a very stirring speech where basically he's a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
He put Hillary Clinton on trial.
He did.
and he went down the list of his allegations, his charges against Hillary Clinton, and had they had the crowd cheering guilty, guilty,
and,
guilty,
and then lock her up.
And some even had signs, lock her up, lock her up. I mean, the crowd went nuts. They really did. So, and then there was a great speech from Ben Carson. I know, Abe, that you've been monitoring that. You've also been monitoring how CNN was reacting.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that after the break.
Yeah.
When we get Bishop E.W. Jackson. And I want to hear because, you know, Abe was able to watch this, and I want to catch that. Before we let you go, because we just got about 60 seconds left with you, you know, one of the things that was supposed to happen here at the Republican convention was violent protests.
Yes.
What has it been like outside in terms of the news stories that you've been hearing?
Well, the news story I heard this morning was a couple arrests yesterday. That's it. Apparently, the authorities are being given high marks for how they have kind of cordoned off the convention center. I heard one of the delegates that we have been talking to, they almost have to walk for a half hour to get because they block streets off,
right.
Keeping people back. The only thing I saw on video yesterday were a couple of young women who put up a sign about Donald Trump and, you know, they were arrested and probably misdemeanor charges. But so far, it has been very, very quiet.
Yeah.
Not the kind of thing that a lot of people were predicting so
that's
far.
Right. So yeah. far. Okay, that was a big worry, especially in light of Baton Rouge and Dallas that nowadays nobody knows what might happen. So
Big speech today from Ted Cruz. Just want to let people know. This is the one that people are waiting for.
Because they want to know if he's going to be conciliatory and unity or if he's going to push back. So Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Thank you, Fred, for keeping us up to speed on what's happening in Cleveland.
You bet.
Well, folks, we are going to continue our discussion about the Republican convention after the break. We're going to be having Bishop E.W. Jackson in, who's senior pastor of the Called Church. He's founder and president of Stand Foundation. His show, The Awakening, airs on Urban Family Talk Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He is at the convention, my understanding, and so we'll be talking with him, the bishop, about what his perspective is, what his take is. I also want to kind of pick Abe's brain a little bit about the reaction to Ben Carson's speech on that CNN panel. That sounds like it's going to be pretty eye-opening. Well, next we want to welcome a very special guest in studio, Melanie Jasper, wife of J.J. Jasper. Our listeners have known J.J. for years, J.J. Jasper in the Morning, and may or may not know much about Melanie, but she is the great woman behind the kind of okay guy that we know, J.J. Jasper. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
They got you in that chair, and it's like a little kid's chair.
I feel so short.
You're way down low. Listen, Melanie, I didn't know you were a writer. Outstanding job writing.
Thank you.
We're discussing with you a blog that you wrote for The Stand, talking about how grateful you are for those who serve and protect. Why don't you tell us, first of all, why you felt the need to write something about this?
Well, I tell you, I was the night of the Dallas protest. I was cleaning my kitchen watching the Kelly File on Fox News, and they had a split screen of these protests going on. And then in real time, you see these officers taking on fire. And I have to tell you, it angered me. It angered me to my core. My only brother is a police officer. So it hits very close to home to me. It becomes very real to me. And I wrote that in about 10 minutes, to be honest.
Wow.
So
right from the heart.
It was straight from the heart. And if you don't, can I read a little excerpt from it?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I just kind of wanted to put a human face to these officers, and they're real people. They're humans.
Right.
And I just, you know, with all the in today's climate and all these anti-police protests where you hear all these chants of pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, or we want dead cops and we want them now, it breaks my heart because here's these human beings. That can you imagine going up to a routine traffic stop, you know, where, goodness gracious, there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop, but I would be a nervous wreck. I can't imagine. And so this, if you don't mind, I'll just read this one excerpt. These community servants kiss their families goodbye every day, not knowing what their day will hold. Can you even imagine getting a call to talk to someone out of committing suicide or coming up on a scene where someone did take their life or maybe even a young child? Can you imagine pulling up on the scene of a horrible wreck where not only the vehicles were mangled, but the people too? Can you imagine taking a call where you had to calmly enter a situation where a house or business was being broken into? Can you imagine the feeling you'd have looking for a lost or an abducted child? Can you imagine being the person called to a horrible freak accident where a child's been killed? Can you imagine giving chase to someone in the dark of night who may or may not be armed? And I just went on and on to say, can you just wrap your brain around that? These people are human. They have human feelings and emotions, and we expect them to be all things to all people. And it's just a huge thing to lay on the back of someone.
Yeah, Melanie, and hearing that, it I can't help but be reminded of some of the comments that Police Chief David Brown in Dallas made in that. He said, listen, we have families that are broken. We have people with mental health disorders. We have people with all sorts of problems, but we want the police. And not just we foist them on to the police to resolve, which is not what police are supposed to do. And I think your column hits the right chord, because it's easy to talk about police officers in an abstract, but a person like you and a person like me, I've been on scenes with police officers. I've seen their responses, particularly to homicide cases, and seeing the mangled bodies and seeing things like this. And it's very easy to get caught up in the media furor and the protests and all of these things without taking a moment to stop and reflect that these are real people. Did Chief Brown's comments, I guess you wrote this as soon as you saw the protest.
I saw the protest. It was okay. Later Chief Brown made his comments. But what an amazing man, just a wonderful man of God that's trying to bring community together. Mm-hmm. But again, I just think we need to pray for these men and women. I see my brother going to work every day, and y'all, all he wants to do is come home at night and eat a good warm dinner and love and hug on his kids and his sweet wife. Mm-hmm. You know, these are just real people. Can you imagine coming into the radio station, or if you're a banker or whatever, and having a target put on your back? Mm. I mean, when they put their work clothes on, they're putting a target on their back.
Yeah, right.
And the way that the climate is today, and it's heartbreaking to me. These are men who probably since young childhood have had a desire to help people. They're servant leaders is what they are. They have servant hearts. These are good people. And I don't think they wake up in the morning going, oh boy, I might get to shoot somebody today.
Wow.
They don't. That, my goodness, they don't. They want to help people. I've been on the other end of the 911 call calling for help, and they have been there for me. Mm-hmm. And they want to be there for you. And they don't care if you're black or white or Asian. They just want to help people. Mm-hmm. They're servant leaders. And they want to protect and serve.
Well, now your brother, and I'm not mentioning his name. That's, you know, you can keep him, you know, private. But now your brother was also a Marine.
Yes, before. He was.
So this is a man. He's your younger brother, by
younger
the way?
Younger brother.
All right. So
and that's common. It's common. You have military veterans who become police officers when they get back stateside.
Well, they want to serve their country.
That's right.
And then they come home and they want to serve their community. You do, by the way, Mitch, I want to get to a question about your brother. And ask you about, you know, if you've ever had conversations with him about these kind of things. But you don't soft sell the fact that there are bad cops out there. You
oh,
do
of course.
Mention that, and we want to you know, make that clear. We're not giving everyone a pass. In fact, I heard Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, give his speech at the convention, Republican convention, first night, Monday night. He was following up with an interview yesterday or last night. And he said, I prosecuted under my, you know, mayorship, I guess that's the right way of putting it. When there were bad cops, we went after them. We
Absolutely.
Put them away. And that's what you do with the bad in any kind of employment. But have you ever talked with your brother about what he feels going out into the field on a, you know, daily basis, or whenever his shift is, he's on his shift, and what it feels like to be under that kind of pressure, and then especially now with that target being literal in a lot of cases.
Sure. Yeah, you know, it just breaks his heart because he does have such a heart for these people. He really does. He's it's unnerving now to put that uniform on, and he's worried for not only himself but his comrades, you know, that put that same uniform on every day. And they really do try to go out and make a difference. And now, I mean, we haven't talked so much in detail about it, but I just can't even imagine fearing to be that next YouTube video or fearing, you know, and, you know, because we want them to be all things, all people, I just can't imagine how in that split second of time, how they have to make so many decisions very quickly. And, you know, this is just, it's just added to
the regular pressure.
It's just the regular pressure. And I'm sure he is a little fearful, for lack of a better word, or I'm sure they all are a little bit nervous, you know, even to pull somebody over these days because, you know, he he has participated in a lot of community programs this summer to help less fortunate children. And, you know, it's sad when you're at those places and people are screaming horrible things at you in front of these children when he's really just there to help these kids.
Has that happened to him before?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes. Horrible, horrible things in front of these precious little children that, you know, he's trying to show that police officers, where they're there to help. They're not there to be scary monsters. They're not. They just want to keep the peace, yeah. You know, and keep everyone safe. And it just breaks my heart to know in the small town where we live that people are being horrible and just saying things that are just vile to them.
And that's some of the negative consequences from this. And I believe the media is complicit in this. In America, historically, little boys dreamed about being police officers.
Right.
Yep.
You know, that is changing. That is changing. Now you have people growing up with this animus towards police officers, regardless of, you know, socioeconomic and background and ethnic background. And then the immediate net result, in my estimation, from this is that this hostility toward police officers will result in more people, not less, more people being victimized by criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have this apprehension, like police officers have to make split-second life and death decisions on a regular basis. When you enter these hostile circumstances with a slight moment of hesitation, it's going to reduce your willingness to enter them.
Right.
That's right.
So you're going to have less people signing up to become police officers, you're going to have lower response times into high crime areas, and the net result of this is not going to be a positive for America's society. And the most needy neighborhoods, it's going to be worse.
It's true.
That's my belief is that in times like this, where you have like even the racial tensions, what happens is the most innocent people in our society are the ones who get the blowback.
That's right.
They're the ones who get the stray bullet from gunfire or, you know, drive-by shootings or those kinds of things. When people go ballistic over something that happens, it's usually the innocent. And that's a very good point, Abe, because in a lot of these neighborhoods where police are now going to be reticent. Well, why? Why put not only my life on the line, but, you know, maybe even for lesser, you know, issues, my career on the line? I'm just going to go around this neighborhood. I'm just going to patrol somewhere else. And then the people who really do need the help, who, you know, because they're being victimized, they can't rely on the police coming. And it's kind of that down road effect, downstream effect maybe, that is kind of unanticipated.
That's right. And which is why I caution people who, and I've said this on this show before, there's a unique and distinct difference between a legitimate and genuine cry for justice and a plea for vengeance.
Yes.
Vengeance is fleshly. It is devilish. It is wicked. And what we see with people taking retaliatory aims at police officers, that's not a cry for justice.
Right.
That's not a cry for justice at all. That's an exhibition of men trying to utilize fleshly means to achieve some modicum of vengeance. And then to what end?
Right.
Because the most vulnerable end up harmed the most.
Yes.
As a result of it.
Well, Melanie, thank you so much for writing this piece. It's titled Grateful for Those Who Protect and Serve. If you go to AFA.net, you'll see a couple of places where you can access The Stand, and Melanie Jasper has been our guest. Look for this, folks. Give it a read. Melanie, thank you so much
for sharing that
and for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, folks, when we come back, we'll be talking to Bishop E.W. Jackson. He is at the Republican Convention. We'll be talking to him about what he is seeing there, what he is hearing there. And then next hour, Alex McFarland will be our guest. This is Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman this week with Abe Hamilton, AFA's public policy analyst. You are listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We'll take a short break, folks, and then we'll be back to go on with the program.
Mm-hmm. Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Lenny Lucchetti, author of True Depth, Moving Beyond Cultural Churchianity. We'll also talk with Dave Weichel, author of The Way of Hope, Growing Close to God Through Loss. We'll also have more of the timely commentary and encouragement you've come to expect. All that and more on the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. From the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Stearns with this commentary next. The firefighters at Station 48 in Sunny Mead Ranch, California, wanted to honor the police officers killed in Baton Rouge and Dallas. So they posted a pro-police flag on one of the fire engines. It was a black and white flag with a blue stripe through the middle. Eric Hilly came up with the idea. He's one of the firefighters, a military veteran. A few days later, the firefighters received an email telling them the flag had to come down. The fire chief said there were concerns that firefighters might become targets of violence. Extremists targeting the fire engine. That was the reason. They were also told to remove photos of the flag that had been posted on their personal Facebook pages. Firefighter Hilly took down the flag from the fire engine, but he refused to take down the photos from Facebook. He said it's heartbreaking they're not allowed to show support for their brothers and sisters in blue. This is what a fundamentally transformed nation looks like, folks. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano in the chair with Abe Hamilton, AFA public policy analyst, in the chair right next to me. Tim Wildman is out this week. He will be back in this chair next week. Listen, you know, we were just talking to Melanie Jasper, and by the way, J.J. Jasper was he was just outside the studio, and he was listening to his wife, very proud of her. But he did say he wanted me to mention to our listeners that he gets a percentage of speaking fees when Melanie's invited. She's a good speaker. An excellent writer. And so, but listen, I just wanted to mention something. We didn't have time to mention it. There's a controversy up in Muncie, Indiana. Isn't there always, you know, that, those troublemakers up there in Muncie. Someone put a billboard up. You know, they have these, I like these billboards, the ones that change, electronic billboards.
Yeah.
And that's pretty interesting. But someone had paid for a billboard on this electronic billboard. When it popped up, it said, "Hate cops? ? Next time you need help, call a crackhead." And I thought that was pretty funny. But they got all kinds of commentary and complaints, some support as well, and said that the billboard itself was racist, I guess, because everyone assumed that crackheads were black. I don't think that that's anywhere near the truth.
It's but not even close.
I don't think it was even close to being true. But I thought that, you know, that we were talking about policemen not wanting to go into certain areas.
Yeah.
I think this is a valid point to make that, and it's not to excuse bad cops.
No, not in the least.
Those should be sought out and drummed out if the case can be proven, but the role that the police play, not just in America, in any civilized society. They call it a thin blue line for a reason, and that is that there's not all really all that many of them, and they are, in a sense, what stands between the majority of us and total anarchy. But I thought it was an interesting way of putting it. Criminals are not going to help you. Police are there to help you. There's got to be some way to encourage between the minority community and the police in most urban areas a little bit more understanding, maybe some back and forth and some discussion about how those relations can be improved without without allowing our society or even a segment of it to so radically hate the police that they are unable to do their job, which is that thin blue line, protecting us from anarchy.
I agree. And first of all, I think a lot of the public noise about this assumes that a lot of this dialogue and the work that's necessary to cause there to be better interactions between the police officers and their communities is not already happening. It is happening. It is happening. And here's something that you know, people are rallying around something that's illegitimate is when facts don't matter.
Right.
Like you consistently hear in a lot of these protests and a lot of these positions, the repeating of the whole hands up, don't shoot narrative, for example.
Right.
Which
from Ferguson.
From Ferguson with the Mike Brown case and Officer Darren Wilson. Well, that was factually disproven. It was factually demonstrated that that was an absolute lie,
right?
Made up of whole cloth. But you see the narrative being repeated so much so where I believe the Democratic National Convention is going to include Michael Brown's mom as a speaker.
Right.
I mean, that fact is a demonstration by the Democratic Party that they are legitimizing a narrative that the facts have proven to be false.
And this is proven by the Department of Justice.
Proven not by local, if you want to call it, white bread, Ferguson Police Department. No, proven by a racially motivated on the side of perceived black people by the Obama Department of Justice headed up by Eric Holder. He concluded that Officer Darren Wilson operated in a justified position of shooting. He concluded that the hands up, don't shoot narrative was a lie.
Right.
Nevertheless, facts don't matter. That is an example of how you know many people are not seeking true justice. They're not. You see people looking for something that is not just, and it's being confirmed by an entire party.
I really like the way you've kind of framed this over the last week or so. And you said it's one thing to seek true biblical justice.
That's right.
It's another thing to seek revenge. And I think that's something that, you know, and it's interesting, you know, and so this we're going to use this to transition to our next guest because that is an insight, and you've, you know, not only know what you're talking about because you've been a prosecuting attorney in both New Orleans and Houston, Texas, but you're also a minister and a Bible teacher. This is really a moment when the church should step in because, you know, I say step in, enter the conversation and enter the dialogue and to try to be peacemakers. At the same time, I have no problem with wanting to promote biblical righteousness,
that's
which
right.
is what the biblical word justice means.
That's right.
It's biblical righteousness. Lots of people make claims, well, we want justice. This is just. This isn't. Well, the Bible is the standard for all things, and including how we treat one another. That's what the Bible calls justice, is biblical righteousness. So the church needs to enter into this conversation, and one of the people who have done that and are doing that is Bishop E.W. Jackson, who is senior pastor of the Called Church. He's also founder and president of Stand Foundation. His show, The Awakening, airs on Urban Family Talk on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings from 9 to 10 Central Time. Bishop Jackson, welcome back to Today's Issues.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, you are at the Republican Convention, is that correct?
Even as we speak. In fact, I'm on Media Row right now, and there's a lot of hustle and bustle all around me. So, yes, I'm at the convention.
Let me ask you something. I talked to Fred Jackson, who's a news director for American Family News, and asked him what he had heard in terms of stories. So I might as well just ask you, since you're there, What has the protest scene been like outside the convention? Because, and you're at the Quicken Loans Arena there in Cleveland. A lot of people had predicted some, you know, very possibly very violent protests outside Quicken Loans Arena. What have you observed in terms of protests, the way law enforcement's handling it, and the general atmosphere outside the arena?
I have to say virtually nothing, because I have been all over the perimeter. You know, they've got a wide perimeter around the arena, and in order to get in and out, you've got to go, of course, outside the perimeter. But I, one day, for example, I walked about 45 minutes just trying to find my way to a street that they allowed cars to drive on. Throughout the whole time, I didn't see anything of any significance. A person here and there. So I think that the police presence seems, at least so far, to have shut down any major protest effort.
Well, great.
Hi, Bishop Jackson. This is Abe here. I know you're right there on the floor. You're on the ground there in Cleveland. Based on what you've seen so far at the convention, I know yesterday there were some speakers, and then and the day before there were some speakers as well. I just wanted to see if you could provide our listeners with your initial take on what's going on there with the presentations and the speeches that are being made.
Well, look, I think it's sounding the right tone. It's inspiring. It's uplifting. Of course, there are some shots being taken at Hillary Clinton. I think rightfully so, because I think that we've got to grapple with the issue of lawlessness at the highest levels of government. And I think that's the main issue that's been raised, the fact that we're being lied to, that our Constitution is not being followed, our national security is being put at risk, and now this person wants to be the commander-in-chief and the leader of the free world. So there have been some shots taken at her, but primarily it really has been inspiring and uplifting, supporting our law enforcement, supporting our veterans, wanting to get our economy working again for every single American, black, white, Hispanic, regardless of their gender, their background, wanting to see our country come together as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Those are the themes that move me, and I think those are the themes that they'll have to continue to strike in order to bring unity to the Republican Party and ultimately unity to the country.
Bishop Jackson, were there any particular speeches over the last two nights or last two days? Because there are speeches during the day as well, not just those during prime time. Were there any speeches in particular, anything that someone said that has stuck out in your mind?
Oh, my goodness. There have been so many. The first two that jump to mind are the parents of those people slain by illegal immigrants, the power of their testimony. And hearing that one man, I forget his name, but the one man who said that when his son was first killed, Democrats and Republicans rallied to his side. But as soon as the Democrats found out his son was killed by an illegal immigrant, they abandoned him. And I thought, wow, how telling that is, that it is more important for them to support illegal immigration and illegal immigrants than it is for them to uphold the rights of a family to be free in their property and person from being attacked and killed by an illegal immigrant. I mean, I just thought that was telling. That was powerful. I think Rudy Giuliani hit it out of the park. He said, what happened to there's no red America or blue America? There's just one America, the United States of America. He said, what happened to that? Because that's what Barack Obama said when he spoke at his first convention. I didn't believe that he believed it. And everything he's done in his administration shows me that he didn't. And then I was really moved by last night's speech by Donald Trump Jr., because I think family is a major issue. And while we know Donald Trump doesn't have a perfect family any more than anybody else does, I am moved by the fact that his children have rallied beside him, that they love their father, that they're supporting him. I think the country needs to see more of those kinds of examples.
Yeah, Bishop Jackson, I personally, in watching it, as well as some of the commentary following Donald Trump Jr.'s speech, a lot of people resonated with that speech, and they looked at Donald Trump in a different light, because many of them kind of evaluated in light of, wait a minute, if this guy can raise these kind of children, maybe mm-hmm. we should give him another look. Did you get that kind of feeling right from there in Cleveland?
It has continued to dominate my thinking. Even when I was not a Donald Trump supporter, I would look at his family and I would have to say, man, I don't know what he's done right, but he's clearly done something right. I mean, you know, and I would frankly, I have to be very honest, I pray about that and say, Lord, you know, are you saying something through this? Are you pointing out that maybe there's some sense in which this man has something that may not seem perfect to us as Christians, but that you are involved with something that he is going to bring to the country that it really needs right now? And since he's ultimately gone on, of course, to win the nomination, I think more and more about that. Because, look, I believe the biggest social problem we have in country is the absence in this country is the absence of fathers.
Yes.
The single biggest social problem. I think Donald Trump, if nothing else, nobody, I think, can say Donald Trump's been a bad father, because his children are there to say, we love our dad. He's been wonderful to us, and we're standing with him.
You know, I mentioned that we had Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News, on. He was on at the top of the program. He also mentioned Donald Trump Jr.'s speech. In fact, when I was talking to him before the program began, I just said, well, I want to ask you about some of the speeches. And he was talking about even before the program. The thing that struck him was the same thing you're talking about, was the fact that Donald Trump Jr. and apparently the other Trump kids were not given, I don't know how to put this, because they've obviously, you know, been blessed by the wealth that Donald Trump has amassed. But he said Donald Trump Jr. talked about the fact that he worked under the foreman at a construction site and learned how to drive a tractor, bulldozer, and learned how to use chainsaws and all kinds of other equipment. And that just struck me as something that Americans have always taken great pride in, and that is the work ethic by which a person can accomplish virtually anything. And you're saying the same thing, that this has been something that's impacted you. Do you think this has also impacted a lot of the other people who have been in attendance?
Well, and I'll tell you the truth. It impacted the evangelicals who were at the meeting in New York. I was on the steering committee to help pull that meeting together. And one of the things that Donald Trump said, the news media didn't report this, but Donald Trump said that he raised his children with Christian values. You don't lie. You don't smoke. You don't drink. You don't carouse. You are responsible. You take care of your family. You work hard. You earn what you get. Nobody's going to give anything to you. You're not entitled to something because you're my children. You got to work for what you get. You know, fundamentally, Judeo-Christian values, and Donald Trump framed it in that way. He said, look, the biggest impact Christianity has had on me is I've raised my children with Christian values. And, you know, you sit there and you look at them and you say, well, people want to question his Christianity, but you say, well, you can't question that his children certainly seem to evidence those values and having been steeped in them. So I think it helped move the needle for him then, and I think it's continuing to do so now.
This is Abe here again, Bishop Jackson, and I'm going to segue away from Donald Trump Jr., but a couple of things that stuck with me. I'm a father. I have four children myself. Donald Trump Jr. introduced himself as being 38 years old and having five children himself, and echoing the values that his father raised him with, it gave you the clear indication that he plans to pass that same tradition on to his children. And then on top of that, in addition to Donald Trump Jr.'s speech, I felt Chris Christie's speech was rousing. As a former prosecutor, and I know you're an attorney by trade as well, he laid out a case, and he referred to it as his indictment of Hillary Clinton. And I thought, wow, this is a tone that can be carried on throughout the rest of the election process. And I also think, is Chris Christie making a play for attorney general here? What did you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that in some ways he would make a fine attorney general. Of course, I'm a little bit concerned about Chris Christie's views on the social issues.
Yes.
I think he leans a little left there.
Yes.
But look, the one thing that gives me solace, we've got to get back to the rule of law. Mm. We've got to get back to this idea that the law is the same for everybody, that we are a nation of laws and not of men, as our founding father said. And I think Chris Christie is somebody who will certainly bring that spirit to the office. Right now, it seems to me that the whole Justice Department is simply the political tool of President Barack Obama. That's a very, very dangerous thing in a constitutional republic.
Our guest is Bishop E.W. Jackson, who's senior pastor of the Called Church. His show, The Awakening, airs on Urban Family Talk Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Time. Bishop Jackson, let me ask you this. I watched Ben Carson's speech, and I'm going to ask in just a moment here for Abe to mention what he saw in terms of the response of a panel from CNN. But I love Ben Carson, and he is an inspirational guy, and I don't know how anyone can despise that man. But now, Abe, you watched Ben Carson's speech and then watched the CNN panel afterwards. Tell us what you saw, and then I want to get Bishop Jackson your take on this.
Yeah, so first of all, I thought Dr. Carson's speech was amazing. I had never seen him as energetic ever, actually, in making a public presentation. And in his speech, he talked about Hillary Clinton, the impact she's had on education, and lots of other things. But he also mentioned the direct connection that Hillary Clinton has to Saul Alinsky. He highlighted the fact that Hillary Clinton wrote her master thesis on Saul Alinsky, that she was a personal disciple of his, and also mentioned that Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, a pragmatic primer on being a realistic revolutionary, that Saul Alinsky dedicated the book to Lucifer. And he concluded that portion of the speech really by saying, do we really want a person in the White House who has such an adoration, who has been such an ardent follower of an individual, Saul Alinsky, who would dedicate his book to Lucifer? And I thought he hit all the right points. I mean, that's an undeniable fact. Well, the crowd clearly received exactly what Dr. Carson was saying. But I was amazed to see the reaction of the CNN panel with Van Jones and Essie Cupp and Andrew Cuomo and others who completely, in my estimation, are attempting to nullify Dr. Carson's import and the significance of his presentation. What do you think about that, Bishop Jackson?
Now, look, I didn't see the CNN critique, but it doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, the CNN, of course, is nicknamed the Clinton News Network.
Right.
And there's a reason for that. But look, liberals really do hate conservatives in general, but they have a specifically vitriolic disdain for black conservatives.
Mm.
Because there is this sense of ownership that they have of black people. I mean, I really believe this. It's this sense that they are our saviors. They are the ones who rescued us. And how dare we not agree with them? How dare you not support Hillary Clinton? And I think you see that come out whenever they critique what any black conservative has to say. I mean, look, Dr. Carson told the truth. And for me, I think it's important that Americans know that Hillary Clinton is a direct personal disciple of a man who thought that Lucifer was somebody to be admired. Now, she claims to be a Christian. I wouldn't associate myself with anybody who thinks the devil should be admired.
Right.
So, but I wouldn't expect CNN to respond any other way but to try to diminish Dr. Carson. You know, before he got involved in politics, he was a beloved figure.
Yeah.
But now in certain circles, he's a vilified figure because they don't like what he stands for. So doesn't surprise me a bit.
That's exactly right. And it's amazing what you said, and he didn't even watch he didn't even see the reaction because obviously he's at the convention.
Right.
But what you said is exactly how it played out. The first one to speak up was Van Jones, and exactly what he said was, wow, it's amazing. Why would Dr. Carson go out there and mention a book nobody's ever heard of, that nobody's ever read, and connect Hillary Clinton to Lucifer? It is an embarrassment, is what he said. A person who's so beloved before, it's embarrassing to watch such a radical fall from grace, is what he said. And then Essie Cupp follows it up by saying, I can't even provide analysis. This is just despicable. This is just despicable. And completely not even addressing the substance of his commentary, completely attempt to dismiss him. And I think it's exactly what you said, Bishop Jackson, that there is a sense of ownership amongst progressives that they think they have on black people. That if a black person steps up as being a conservative, it is, all right, we must attack discredit and tarnish immediately, because we cannot allow those who are on our intellectual and ideological plantation to get off of it. And that is the way it did come off to me.
And Van Jones should be embarrassed for himself, because Van Jones doesn't know anything about our Constitution, anything about what it means to be a constitutional republic. He doesn't respect that. He wants a revolution in this country. So as far as I am concerned, he's the one who should be embarrassed. I still love Dr. Carson. I admire him. I think he's a man of tremendous courage. He's a man of great brilliance. But look, having run for office and having known what it is to get caught in the eye of the media storm, you find out something. They don't just disagree with you. They hate your guts. And they don't want to just win the argument. They want to destroy you personally. So that's the way they work.
Well, and I've just got to say, I agree with Abe that Dr. Carson seemed like he was just having fun last night. You know, I haven't seen him speak. I know he's given speeches, but I have not seen him speak since he stepped away from the race for the nomination. He seemed so relaxed when he was speaking. You could tell this man believes what he's saying. He's having fun talking about it. And I hope if Donald Trump becomes president, that he gets a position, a very influential position, because I think he would do a lot of good for our country. We're going to ask you one last question, Bishop Jackson, then we're going to let you go. There's been a lot of talk in the media, again, you know, take that for what it's worth, a lot of talk in the media that this was going to be a civil war within the Republican Party here at this convention. How have you seen this playing out in terms of the Never Trump movement and the expected fracturing at the convention?
Not at all. That's not happened. Now, yeah, there was a brief rules fight, and there probably are a few holdouts. We're wondering what Ted Cruz is going to do when he speaks tonight. Will he give a full-throated endorsement to Donald Trump? But in terms of division, it's just not there. I mean, most of these people have determined that Donald Trump's the nominee. Hillary Clinton must be defeated. I mean, the idea of Hillary Clinton appointing two or more Supreme Court justices is unthinkable. And everybody understands that if that happens, the pro-life movement can kiss itself goodbye for 50 years, perhaps. It cannot be allowed to happen. I think most people realize that. And people are rallying to Donald Trump's side as the person we have some hope will keep our country from going further into the abyss.
Bishop Jackson, thank you so much for being our guest today and giving us a kind of an inside view of what's been happening there at the Quicken Loans Arena and the surrounding area during the Republican convention. Be safe there and enjoy your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what'd you think about the comments from the bishop?
I think his comments were insightful, and I'm so glad that we have him there at the convention to give us a firsthand look at what's going on. And some of the points he made, I mean, the last point he made concerning the Supreme Court nominees, I mean, that is a point that it's hard to ignore. I mean, because the potential exists, as the bishop said, for in this immediate next term to nominate and appoint up to two Supreme Court justices. And over the next 8 years, you could get up to as many as five. I mean, this election really will likely shape America for the next 50 to 70 years.
And it's not just the Supreme Court. It's the entirety of the federal judiciary.
That's exactly right, all down the line.
Excuse me. Well, folks, when we come back, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. And when we come back, Alex McFarland will be with us. I'm not even sure where he is. He may even be at the convention. I don't know. But we're going to be talking to Alex about a couple of things, but certainly the 21 toughest questions your kids will ask about Christianity. This is Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined by my co-host, Abe Hamilton, AFA public policy analyst. Again, we're going to take a five-minute break. When we come back, more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.